Welcome, everybody, to episode 26 of the Business of Sport. My name is Ahmed Al-Houli, and I am your host, and my co-host is Mr. Robbie L. As we do every week, we bring you interesting facts, insights from the world of the business of sport. Rob, how are you, buddy? How's things?
Good, my friend. How you doing? Enjoying another crazy week in the world of sport, and looking forward to chopping it up with you.
Absolutely. It never seems to disappoint us. Lots happening again this week. We have another action-packed show. We'll start right at the top with, this is a really interesting one. Rivals, DraftKings and Fanatics are going at it. It's I'd say it's more one-sided. So what's happened is DraftKings has put in a submission to acquire PointsBet USA. After Fanatics went in and did the same thing about a month or so ago, or just under a month, so Fanatics put in a deal at $150 million US. DraftKings was sort of like a last second mover, just before the board is about to meet and make a decision and vote on the Fanatics deal. They've come in and thrown $195 million. Deal at PointsBet. This is really interesting. We haven't seen much of this in recent times. It really puts a perspective on things, and it creates this awesome rivalry that as a consumer and as a viewer, we like to see. What are your thoughts, Rob?
Well, look, you know, I'm in the sales business, and there's nothing like having two bidders. The folks at Fanatics were early movers on the point bet opportunity, making that offer. And again, it was an unsolicited offer too. You know, they had points bet. It talked about, making a decision to kind of contract their U.S. operations. That offer was made by Fanatics. And playing a little possum over there was DraftKings, kind of waiting for the 11th hour, to a point to where they can come in and swoop in with a sweeter deal, $195 million, and kind of leave the folks at Fanatics with very little time to counter, if you will. As someone who's been a bridesmaid a couple times on acquisitions of some sports franchises, nothing like being able to have the last bid at the table, because that closes out the deal. So in this case, one, it wasn't just a dollar ante up, so to speak. I mean, it was a fairly significant chunk, another 45 million at the end of the day, price increase. And PointsBet, has a decision to make. I think, it's one of those things you start looking at, obviously the money's going to be a big part of it, but start looking at what the partner is and, some of those board members may have future roles within, one buyer or not another. And so those are decisions that'll start getting hashed out when they start reading the fine print of the offer and who has a job once the decision's made. And who doesn't, kind of thing. So, I mean, it'll be quite interesting, but as you said, it's interesting to kind of see a little bit of an eye poke there, from DraftKings to Fanatics, with that 11th hour offer. And let's see how this thing plays out.
So there was some commentary from the CEO of Fanatics, Michael Rubin. He accused DraftKings of attempting to stall their deal and described that move as a desperate move, a move of desperation. What are your thoughts?
Well, look, it's a little bit of a chess match at this point, and probably there could have been some conversations internally, and maybe at some point some assumptions that the deal was going to happen. And so maybe there was some planning, you know, being done internally at Fanatics. And when something like this comes up, you got to save a little face. You got to show a little fight. You got to, you know, make sure that, you know, you don't go down without taking a swing or two. You know, just like any fight, you know, it's, you know, I would say that one, you know, there's certainly a rivalry, you know, being born here a little bit. But at some level, you know, look, it's tactics. You know, obviously, you know, the DraftKings waited, you know, kind of laid in wait to make an offer and put something that was fairly significant. Obviously, if this is a, you know, $150 to $155 million deal, then, you know, probably not going to upset the apple cart for $5 million. But $45 million, you know, causes a board to think twice, you know, on a deal. So I'm sure Ruben is just protecting his brand and protecting his position, probably at some level echoing some choice words that are probably said behind closed doors in a boardroom or on a conference call with their executive staff. But you know, he's just fighting for Fanatics and fighting for the deal. And you know, but it, you know, it'll be interesting to kind of see what direction things go, because you know, it does, you know, how would they say, it does kind of reveal character in some ways. If you're if you accepted a deal and then you're not accepting it, but at the same time, you know, as someone who could be representing, you know, a property and having multiple offers, you know, you got to be fair and honest and upfront with people. So if someone got, you know, fairly, honestly, and accurately got a bid in before deadline, then, you know, then this is what negotiation's about. So hopefully that, you know, whoever's representing, you know, PointsBet was, you know, didn't make any concessions or make any promises to Fanatics. Doesn't sound like they did, but you know, given the long, you know, time frame between their offer and obviously a counter offer or a second offer, makes you wonder, you know, if you know, someone tried to stir something up to maybe try to get a, you know, try to create a bidding war for the brand. And again, that's the job of the seller or the agent that's trying to help sell it. You want a bidding war. You want at least two involved, maybe three. And it didn't sound like there was another entity involved until very late. So it does raise a question. You know, it also raises the question of if you're Fanatics, do you want them at the end of the day? If this is how they're going to, you know, maybe there was a handshake, maybe there was a verbal, you're our guys, we're going with you, and, you know, prove that everybody does have a price to maybe come off their word.
Absolutely. I mean, it's very interesting. How do you think, so let's compare the two brands. DraftKings is a more established brand when it comes to sports gambling than Fanatics, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
This deal would have put Fanatics in a solid position in the sports gambling world. And DraftKings has come in and said, hey, hang on a second. We're the big boys here. Get out of the way. This is our part of the world. This is our territory.
Yeah.
And it would also have to go through, I think, some antitrust, DOJ sort of vetting and so on and so on, because they're pretty much adding to already a huge empire that's existing in one industry. So the term monopoly will start to get thrown around and so on and so on. Obviously that might have a way around, where in terms of Fanatics, this was a new way in to a new world for them, that they playing in a small fashion, like, you know, this was sort of saying, hey, we're here. So what do you think, how do you see this impacting either role, basically?
Well, this is definitely an add-on to what DraftKings is already doing, you know, taking a competitive brand and just absorbing them into their current portfolio. Obviously for Fanatics, it was creating, you know, or validating their participation in a category. I mean, it would be like, you know, DraftKings going off and buying a merchandising company and going, hey, you know, we're DraftKings merchandise, and Fanatics is like, no, you're not.
Hang on a sec.
Yeah, hang on a sec. So, I mean, but it's diversification for Fanatics, and we've seen them doing that, you know, for the better part of, you know, year and a half now, you know, with the acquisition of Topps and the acquisition of, you know, or the, you know, they got into the NFT business and they got out. And then obviously this move into, you know, or the interest in acquiring PointsBet. You know, we all knew Fanatics as an apparel merchandiser and a very good one and a very big one. We've seen them kind of do a natural next step in their acquisition of the jersey rights for NHL, because they were selling the jerseys, and so now it's a Fanatics jersey, not Adidas, Reebok, or Nike. So we've seen them, really be aggressive in creating new revenue streams, getting into new spaces. But they've all been very, merchandising driven. This is one that, you know, kind of was a step outside of their proverbial box a little bit, and, you know, to kind of create the gaming or acquire game, you know, a prominent, you know, well, not prominent, but a gaming entity. And now, like you said, you know, a DraftKings, a FanDuel, you know, someone of that nature is like saying, you know, we're having enough battles with BetMGM and Caesar Sportsbook and, you know, Betfred and a few others that are, you know, we got Jake Paul with his better, you know, we've got a lot of things that are playing into the gambling space.
Awesome.
You know, Fanatics is a form, you know, is well capitalized. They could be formidable. They have league relationships, team relationships, very extensive. You know, very powerful relationships that if they chose to lean on those relationships, you know, who's your buddy? Who's your pal? Who's your friend? You know, Fanatics, who's selling all your merchandise. I mean, literally, they have every league. They have just about every college. I mean, they've got a pretty powerful. Or do you want to go with the guys that just do betting? And kind of looking at who's going to be around longer, guys selling your merchandise or, you know, how is betting eventually going to end up? Are we going to be having a conversation 5 years from now, 10 years from now, like we were with what the EPL is doing about, you know, removing betting branding from, you know, significant, you know, positions on the uniforms and the like, you know,
Chelsea, are we going to, speaking of EPL, Chelsea just signed the 1 year deal with Stake, like £40 million.
Yeah, well, you know, Stake is coming off. You know, it was just crazy because Stake's on our friends at Watford,
mm-hmm.
Stake is obviously the three deal was ending at Chelsea, so you know you'll see a lot of 1 year betting deals for sure because they're going to be year to year at this point. Because it's just a matter of time before they're moved off.
Yeah,
and that's a discount for Chelsea, by the way.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's Chelsea. They discounted themselves with the way they played this year. So
yeah, for sure. But if we go back to the sports gambling environment at the moment, that ecosystem, you have FanDuel spending big on content. I've seen something about Shannon Sharp potentially joining them.
Yep.
They have a few more names that they're signing up. DraftKings has thrown money now at a podcast network that we've spoken about in previous shows. Barstool was acquired by Penn, mm-hmm. and Gaming Content. Betr is trying to sign up all these influencers and whatnot and create content. Fanatics is going the other way, I think. They're leveraging the existing network of leagues and whatnot, and will add this to what they currently do. But we're seeing a very, very close relationship between those two worlds, the worlds of content and sports gambling or betting in general, because they go so well hand to hand, hand in hand, that they're both pivotal to each other's successes. If we look at the NFL and the engagement rate and how many people are tuning in and the amount of betting that's happening during these games, there was reports that this is highest number of engaged users in many, many years. And what's coming along with that is the betting on literally anything from a touchdown to a what's it called, offensive tackle, like anything basically. So it's becoming an integral part of sport, and the big boys are putting their big boy pants on. They're saying, hang on a second, this is our world. Stay where you are, and we're going to try and block you at every single point we can. And it's in their best interest.
Yeah. Yeah. No, again, you know, it's basically protect and turf at this point. And, you know, there, you know, betting obviously was was white snow there for a while, you know, untrodden upon, you know, couldn't go there. Up till 6 years ago, you know, Vegas wasn't a major league city. And all of a sudden, you know, it's okay. Gambling's okay. Yeah. And now they've got NHL. Now they've got NFL. They've got Super Bowl. They've got Formula One. They've got, MLB.
We're about to talk about NBA later on in the show as well.
Yeah. So, you see that, you know, just like when any category opens up, obviously there's been this, they have a lot of capital, a lot of marketing capital that couldn't be spent. Certainly here in the U.S. couldn't be spent. And once it was cleared, you know, state by state, and things started to roll themselves out, you know, those brands started to spend, and, you know, lucratively spending, you know, both influencers, endorsers, you know, partnerships, building, you know, to the point to where, you know, they were building books in stadiums that, 5 years ago, you cast a bet, you were banned from the league forever, kind of stuff. And now you can actually walk in and bet in a stadium that, as a player, you could, you know, still, you know, get banned for a year based on where you bet, when you bet, you know, kind of thing. But, you know, just we went from it, you know, betting went from just totally non-existent to, you know, all in, literally. And with that acceleration, you know, you had players that come in and would do a land grab. You know, FanDuel, you know, DraftKings were obviously already kind of established as fantasy, you know, players, and then naturally moved into, you know, the prop betting and everything else, gambling, and because yes, there's gambling on fantasy leagues too, right? You know, we all play in pool and play in leagues and pay to get in and all that. You know, it's already there. It's just the next progression was not that far away. And look, you know, Fanatics, they're sitting right there. They're getting in. They were getting into, you know, other businesses, acquiring, you know, memorabilia, you know, collectibles, things like that. You know, obviously acquiring, you know, a legacy brand like Topps that was dying, and then gave it new life. And now that, you know, that, you know, again, we've talked about that, you know, building content and betting and odds and getting people just talking about sport and creating, you know, that you can, you know, they're not a, you know, Q, the shopping network kind of thing. You know, they are, they see themselves as a sports company and a sports brand. So, you know, that's the type of content that they want, and talking about sport. And one of the biggest, you know, most watched, most consumed content about sport is, you know, who are you going to take? What's the spread? Why, you know, get knowledgeable people to give you a reason why to take the points or why to take the under, or, you know, hey, here's a really neat prop bet if you want to play this, that, you know, on Thursday nights, this team, you know, is 1-16. And guess what? They're playing on Thursday night. And I know it really looks like they're going to win this game, but here's the trends. And, you know, people like that stuff. They want information.
And people dig deep. Yeah. People
dig deep. They dig deep, especially when their money's on the line.
Yeah. So they dig deep. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. They dig deep.
Very interesting. And that's why those two worlds come very well together.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one to watch play out because, you know.
For sure. And speaking of Fanatics, they're continuing their merchandising growth and dominance now into Europe. They recently signed a deal for a whole league deal. Actually, it's their first in Europe with La Liga, one of the biggest soccer/football leagues in the world. Big deal, huge for Fanatics. Usually, Fanatics is a big brand in the US. Everyone knows in the US, but in Europe, not so much. That's where they bought Tops. When they bought Tops, it gave them a bit more presence in Europe. And now this deal with La Liga is huge because now they have officially arrived on the biggest stage in football, which is Europe, whether we like to acknowledge it or not. People have differences of opinion, but Europe is where the best players play. This is the biggest stage. It doesn't get bigger than that at the moment. So they're definitely continuing their march into the world of merchandising at a rapid pace. Ruben's a very, very smart guy, and I think he'll end up capturing a huge, huge portion of the market slowly but surely. And I honestly see other brands struggling behind because he's so fast and innovative in his dealing. And he's got a great track record.
Yeah, and they are, you know, they're quasi, you know, they're pretty much brand neutral. I mean, obviously they're not, you know, they're you know, in a league like that, you've got, you know, a multitude of jersey providers, suppliers. You know, you've got a New Balance, you've got a Puma, you've got obviously Nike and Adidas, but you've got you've got Kappa and you've got Hummel and you know Joma and a few others, you know, Clemé, and so you've got multiple brands. And for them, you know, it kind of takes them when you go into European football and certainly soccer in general, you know, you're extending into brands that. You know, the sports that they are dominating here in the U.S., you know, it's Under Armour, you know, Under Armour to a degree, but, you know, it's Nike and Adidas, you know, that tend to be the, you know, control a lot of the kit rights. And obviously they made a move into playing in that space with the NHL being the kit provider there. But as they go overseas, there's much more variety of, you know, when you watch these national teams and when you watch, you know, teams in La Liga, you know, the kit providers, the supplier is, you know, and probably in some cases opening new doors to them, for them. You know, they've got great relationships with the Nikes and Adidas of the world and Puma. But now, you know, there are some of those brands that, maybe are just, you know, better known in the European sector. And it allows them to expand their business, get a new relationship, and maybe we see them jump into cricket, into maybe some other leagues that are bigger globally. I mean, obviously we've talked about those sports may not be big here, but the rest of the world is very cricket. Knowledgeable and very big on them. And if you're selling merchandise like they are. You know, they have multiple ways to, you know, to activate that relationship with La Liga, you know, with apparel and collectibles and the like, and they're a machine. So
absolutely. Know. Absolutely. Speaking of European football, one man who's left that world and come to North America is
getting close.
Is probably one of the probably the best player of all time, or of our time for sure. Him and Cristiano go head to head, but he's got a World Cup, so it's hard to beat. I know people will probably come after me for those comments, but it is what it is. Lionel Messi's there's been some revelations about his contract since our last conversation. Mm-hmm. I'll go over a couple of numbers, and then I'll head over to you because I know you've been following this very, very passionately. I've seen your Twitter activity.
Yeah, when you get a client on the jersey of the kit he's going to wear, you follow it a little bit, right?
Absolutely. So it's reported that his deal is pretty much a 2 to 2.5 year deal to 2026, and it's around the number of $150 million. There was also reports that there might be equity in the team as well and signing bonuses and so on. So it's an interesting deal compared to if you look at what he was offered, what he's left, so what is he going to make? Just we're talking purely from the club perspective. The rev share agreements haven't been proposed, haven't been negotiated just yet. I'm sure they'll have them down the line. But, yeah, so interesting. I'll hand it over to you because I know you've been following this very, very passionately.
Well, yeah, there were parameters of that deal. You know, there certainly are some of it speculation, but we're starting to get some clarity on financial terms and how those terms are to be met. There's no subsidy from the league, but the subsidy is kind of coming, you know, from the team, from other, you know, and I think from other owners as well as the ownership stake that's offered for him there when he does choose to retire. The deals that are the rev share with Apple and Adidas are still in the works, being finalized. But we've talked about it, and what it means. I mean, and so think about a stake in a franchise that, this time, 2 months ago was acquired through Beckham's arrival in MLS for $25 million. Immediately, saw its value increase with, new franchises going for $300, $325, and then most recently we've seen a new one go for $500 million. We've seen franchises within MLS start to top $1 million with LAFC, cracking through that number after their championship win last year. And, with the announcement of there was the Apple deal, and then you come back, you follow that up with the announcing, not formally yet, but Lionel Messi announcing that he's going to Miami. And allowing that to start to simmer and those tremors to go all the way through the league and start to take hold and make change and resonate, value from a value standpoint to a league. We saw those impacts. We saw the away games after his designated start date, which has been confirmed now, by the way, and for the U.S. Open Cup, the Champions Cup game against Cruz Azul on the 21st of July. So everybody that's playing Inter Miami on the road or at home after that is sold out immediately. Tickets to that game on the 21st. Yeah, those tickets to the game on the 21st. Skyrocketed. Now they are in discussions with something we were talking about a couple of weeks ago of the potential of moving some key games from DriveThink Stadium to a Hard Rock Stadium to accommodate the demand to watch to your point. And I would agree with you, the greatest player in the world, greatest player in our time, you know, it's a spectacle. And so people are going to want to go watch it. And frankly, you know, Messi can fill those stadiums himself, you know, and if I'm a league and if I'm an owner and I'm paying him what I'm paying him, I'm finding ways to sell 60,000 tickets per game if I can. And if I've got a venue that I can do that in, that'd be great. And, you know, they have plans for their new venue to be, on track, by the end of 25. So, you know, they have their solution coming, but, hopefully Messi is there to open up that stadium. It's an option year for him in 26. At the rate he's going, if you watched him play, a couple of days ago, he absolutely eviscerated the Australian, defenders. And so he looks in good shape. Looks like he's still got good form, and just excited to see that come over here, later this summer, and showcase his skills, here in the MLS for all of us to see on our Apple subscriptions. and see what he's doing, and to see him on SportsCenter highlights, if you will, that MLS is going to get coverage they've never gotten before. Every news outlet is going to cover Messi. Messi scores. I mean, yes, purists, we would watch that. We'd get up early in the morning on Saturdays or Sundays to watch those games, and we'd go in deep into our other social media channels to watch the greatness of Messi. Now we'll get to, we're going to get it. Scott Van Pelt's going to be calling Messi highlights at the end of the day. So it's going to be kind of surreal to start seeing it on a much more regular basis. But that's the good thing for the game in this country, is that when you get to see someone of that stature playing at that level in real time, in the sense of in our normal time, that we don't have to appointment watch him. He will be there all day, every day. It's going to be great for the growth of the game. The question is, does it create, a new structure, for pro rel here or anything like that? That's really the biggest thing that he could change at some point. But I don't know that's going to happen certainly anytime soon, but, he is playing in a last place team and going to be coming in and we'll have a tall task to get that team into the playoffs. And looks like some of his friends are coming to join him. So, that'll be interesting to watch as well. Apparently Di Maria and Buquets are going to be joining him as the three, domestic, or, international, players that for signing. So, he could change roster structure of MLS because of, the others that want to come play with him. And if I'm an owner, I try to replicate that with, Messi's Messi, but, if you're able to get some players in Europe of his quality, get a Neymar to come over here, and is Suarez going to go with Messi? Suarez end up, over there with, again, what type of roster construction are they going to allow? I'd love to see a lot more players still with, quality play in their legs come over here and raise the level of play in our league. I mean, Zlatan came over here and did it and said, I'm bored with this. I'm going back to where it's more competitive. Messi is bringing talent with him, or he's attracting talent to come over here. I mean, you have players that are getting offered crazy money to go to Saudi Arabia. And I can't, I won't argue with any one of them for taking that money.
We're going to be talking about that very shortly.
Yeah, but it's one of those things that, Messi is attracting, players are looking at MLS in a totally different light now that Messi's here. Certainly, young players in this country will grow up seeing, you know, seeing one of the greatest players play. And hopefully what you get is more talented players wanting to come over here and play, but more importantly, watch the talent level around, you know, in our, within our structure raise up and, you know, compete on a global level, see more of our American talent, going to Europe to play, an EPL, but, maybe going there to cut their teeth and then coming back, earlier than they probably would. Right.
That's the key, really. That if they come back in their mid-20s while they've still got some of that prime left in them, that's what makes the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. And, if the league is showing that it's willing to pay at a level that the rest of the world pays, then we probably keep more talent here. More talent will want to come here. I mean, if you look at a MLS schedule and compare it to a, Bundesliga schedule, or whatever, and where those teams play. And yeah, I mean, we're talking about, you're playing in LA, you're playing in New York, you're playing in Chicago, playing in Miami, playing in Dallas, we'll be playing in San Diego, Houston, St. Louis, Minneapolis, you're talking about really, Nashville, vibrant, great cities that are, not that some of the European cities are not, but, we'll go through some of the EPL teams, that are there. I mean, I don't know how much fun is Newcastle. How much fun is, playing in Bristol, Brighton.
About the weather.
And our time of the year, our league, plays, kind of opposite the Premier League schedule a little bit. They overlap a little bit, but those leagues are playing, kind of competing with our football season and our our basketball season, and try to flip it to where soccer comes on, starts in March and ends in early October, so that's not competing too much with our bigger sports. So it'll be quite interesting. And obviously with World Cup coming here, does this spawn a new generation of soccer talent in the U.S. that grew up watching Messi play, and now they can actually go to games to see him play. Not everybody gets a chance to go over. And when he came over here to play in a friendly, I mean, you're not seeing Messi play when Messi cares. Yeah. It's pretty damn special to watch. There's plenty of videos that show what he's like when it matters.
100%. Speaking of Messi, Messi has a Saudi tourism deal believed to be up to about $25 million over 3 years. But listen to the terms of this deal. The deal includes 10 promotional social media posts per year, an annual family vacation with expenses covered for Messi and up to 20 family members and friends, charitable appearances and participation in Saudi Arabia's annual tourism campaign. This is the one that I found interesting. A condition in the contract states that Messi cannot say anything that might tarnish Saudi Arabia's image, a country known for human rights.
It's their morals clause, right?
I'm just laughing about.
Well, look.
As if you put that in a contract, that's a no brainer. If somebody's paying you that sort of money, I can't see him turning around and saying that. But
yeah, but look, it's sometimes contracts are meant, and somewhere there's a lawyer that said, put that in there. I don't care who it is, put it in there. If we're paying anybody money to represent us, the last thing it can do is talk shit about us. Gives us a, an out. But I will be very interested to see if we don't see an Inter Miami jaunt over to Saudi to maybe play a couple games, you know, as part of a little Saudi tour with Messi, you know, embracing with the, the tourism and you kind of get a, you kind of get Bex on there too, you know. Bex isn't afraid to take a few marketing bucks. So
Beckham will milk this Saudi run in football, and anybody who's got half a brain can see it coming. Speaking of Saudi, this week is really interesting. Actually, it gets better and better.
Yeah.
So last season this year, Todd Bowley took over Chelsea. They bought it after Abrahamovich was sanctioned. So on the whole saga. See you later. $4.2 billion. Bowley comes in. Chelsea's going all right. Then he goes on a spending spree. He signed like 11 players, like non-stop signing. Bang, 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 bang. Weird. Everyone was shocked. Gobsmacked. He's signing players on 7-year deals, 8-year deals, 9-10-year deals. Just come, doesn't matter. I'll pay you in installments. I'll give you whatever you want, but over time. Then the off-season comes. He starts selling off all his players. And where are they going?
Going to Saudi. It's a salary dump. Salary dump country.
It's going to the Saudi Pro League. Hang on a second. He's known to have ties or relationships with the Saudis in the past, apparently. This is what they're alleging. Yeah. And now rivals are saying, hang on, come here for a second, mate. We aren't blind. We know you're wealthy, but it's not a coincidence that you've done what you've just done. And they're asking for live investigations by UEFA in regards to fair play and financial fair play and so on and so on and so on. What an absolute interesting situation.
It'd be one thing if the spending spree had resulted in, you know, this massive boost and fantastic run, and then, you know, so he got all the way up to Champions League and said, all right, now I'm gonna sell these guys off. But he bought all these players. They dropped in the standings, fell out of Europa even.
They really struggled.
You know, were, you know, rudderless at the manager, you know, seat, because it was a revolving door, you know. And, you know, it's almost like he's looking for a do-over, and the only one man's trash is another man's treasure, so to speak. And, you know, the Saudi League is looking to improve the quality of their play too. Obviously, you know, getting Ronaldo to go there, looks like Ramos may end up heading over there. Benzema heading over there. So you've got
Mendy, Ziyech, is it Kouwolobi? I think his name is.
Yeah. I mean, you've got quality players, you know, that in the players that were signed by Chelsea, you know, didn't forget how to play the game, so to speak. Just, you know, sometimes it's system, it's culture, it's, you know, coaching, it's chemistry. Lots of things factor into the success of a team.
Takes time,
and you can't, you know, we've seen, you know, teams, you know, get, you know, players try to go somewhere, and, you know, the Lakers tried to do this when, you know, they bring in Karl Malone, they would try to build some other people around Kobe that were all great at one point, but collectively together that it didn't work. And I think it's one of those things where you couldn't buy the culture or the cohesiveness that, you know, that was obviously in clubs like Arsenal and in clubs like Manchester City and the like. I mean, you probably have more culture and camaraderie in the teams that are coming up from the championship, so to speak, you know, because they've been fighting like hell together to get there. And, you know, Luton Town, you know, Burnley, Sheffield United all fought like hell to get there. you know, Lutentown with the greatest run and story of those three. But, you know, when, you know, Chelsea has had a story, you know, has had a history, has had success, has won the league, has won Champions League, has won at the highest level, and has, and Boley has the checkbook to go sign people. But, you know, it's one of those things. You can't sign 5 point guards and go, all right, who's getting rebounds? You know, somebody's got to go do the dirty work. And you can't sign a bunch of players that aren't willing to do dirty work. They all want to be scorers. They all want to be, you know, defenders or the like. And you need guys that just want to go out there and get stuck in for 90 minutes. And, you know, his sporting director or whoever it was wasn't doing a very good job of looking at what they had and what they were buying, and did that round peg fit in a round hole, or were we trying to, you know, solder this guy down and fit him into a place that doesn't work? But so, you know, you see a lot of that. And so part of this is a sell-off, part of this is you know, I need to reset, and Saudi is looking for talented name players to, you know, to bring recognition. You know, we talked about it before. We're kind of waiting to see who's going to pick up Saudi, you know, TV rights globally, because eventually, you know, you have a Benzema, you have a Ronaldo, you start getting some of these other players. I mean, the quality of the plays is going to get better. I mean, MLS quality of the play is going to get better because Messi's here. It's just going to happen. You know, so and Apple's on the front end of that deal. They got in before that deal was announced. Imagine the price had they come in after. But they are, you know, I mean, so it is interesting. I mean, you need to investigate. Certainly got to make sure all that. And we talked about that with some of the other, you know, the sponsorship around some of the other teams that are, you know, owned by, you know, Middle East owners. And all of a sudden they're getting massive deals for sleeves, you know, from Saudi Arabian companies, you know, or Middle Eastern companies that wouldn't spend anywhere else. They're all of a sudden they, you know, they've got no business in England, but they're going to put their name on some of the biggest pieces of inventory that the EPL has to offer. So it's quite interesting. We chuckle a little bit about it, but it's what makes this game, this business tick, is you know, that type of activity. Because even when the Premier League's not playing, you're talking about it. You know,
oh, for sure.
I mean, it's impacting the world. It's impacting what's going on in other leagues. You know, it'll be interesting to kind of see where this thing settles out. And more importantly, you know, Chelsea, you going to get your shit together and get back? I mean, there's a lot of people that just sat there and was like, what the hell just happened to that group? I mean, not like guys picked up and left, free agents left and guys wanted out. You basically had, what many thought would be a positive change, you know, given, American ownership coming in, someone that had capital, didn't have the stigmatisms that Abramovich carried with him, you know, being a Russian owner, et cetera. And it blew up. I mean, money didn't buy you happiness, so to speak. And, you saw other clubs rise. You saw some clubs fall. They have work to do. There are expectations there that need to be met, and they were clearly not met.
Two clubs fell out, which was Chelsea and Liverpool, replaced by Manchester United and Newcastle. Another Saudi investment. But yeah. One of the things that really raised the alarm bells was Ruben Neves from Wolves had Liverpool after him, and he said no, he wants to go to the Saudi League. He's like in his mid-20s. He's in the peak of his career. So that really got people talking and really triggered all of this. So interesting to see how things play out. We'll definitely follow it and see how things come around.
Like I said, I don't know about you, but if I'm in my mid-20s and I get offered the money that the Saudi League's offering, player of that stature, of that quality coming from the EPL. It's generational wealth. Hard not to go over there and just dominate and go, I'll play for my country and, you know, on the international level. And you know, do I want to live in Newcastle? Do I want to live in Liverpool, or do I want to live in Riyadh
and mansion.
Live like a king? Yeah.
Yeah. Some mansion in Riyadh or some mansion
somewhere
in Saudi. Interesting. All right. Well, let's see how that pans out, but that's a really interesting situation that's currently unfolding as we speak, actually. Moving back to Vegas, probably our favorite conversation. We have the Oakview Group, who has a $10 billion plan for Vegas. This is a really interesting story because it started somewhere, it's becoming something else. So the group is planning a basketball arena, and it's pretty much increasing its investment from $3 billion to $10 billion in Vegas for a basketball arena, hotel, gaming, and an entertainment district around it, which pretty much goes hand in hand. One of the most interesting things is they're not asking for public money, which means that investors get more of a share. There's potentially more of a share for private investment. They've taken a project from 35 acres to 66 acres, which is pretty much almost double. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver has come out and said that it's very highly likely that Vegas is going to have an NBA team. I mean, one of the rumors in the rumor mill is that LeBron James has expressed interest in joining in the ownership group through Fenway Sports Group. Vegas is becoming the not mecca of boxing anymore, or the mecca of martial arts, the mecca of sports of the world. I mean, Vegas now has everything. Like, this will pretty much seal the deal if the A's go there as well, which there's some news in that that's happened the last week, but we'll shelve that for the time being. How is this going to add to the current market in Vegas? Is Vegas now becoming saturated for the population it has and the population that visits annually?
Well, first of all, the NBA, I mean, you know, Oakview leadership is, you know, starts with Tim Leiweke. Tim was the mastermind behind AEG's global plan, starting with when I worked with him at AEG in Los Angeles when we opened up Staples Center, built LA Live, built Home Depot Center, made those acquisitions, you know, did the O2 in London, had Allianz Arena in Germany, and MasterCard Arena in Shanghai. The global facility management and acquisition, you know, kind of plan, you know, Tim was the godfather of that. And since Tim has, you know, gone over, started OVG, they established the Alliance, the arena network is one of the Arena Alliance is one of their first platforms. They've since, you know, were behind the ownership and the push to get the Kraken NHL franchise to Seattle. They renovated Key Arena into what's now Climate Pledge. They built the new arena for the Islanders, USB Arena, in Long Island, and are building venues around the world. And Vegas has always been the, you know, the entertainment capital. Tim is no stranger to Las Vegas. He built T-Mobile, built Sprint, Sprint now, T-Mobile Arena down in Kansas City. I mean, these are, you know, he's been a visionary of building entertainment centerpieces, and not that not that Vegas needs an entertainment centerpiece, but Vegas is growing. Vegas has opened its kimono to the world of sport because now betting is okay. They were always taboo because of that. I lived there. I was building a $5 billion project that didn't get off the ground because we couldn't get major sports properties to come. We could get all the minor league hockey and volleyball leagues and archery and bowling to come, but you couldn't get football, basketball, hockey, baseball. Couldn't get any of them to come. And now they're all there. We're on the way. And so the key component, and you mentioned it, is that they're not going to ask the Las Vegas, you know, there's no need to go to a vote and ask for a referendum from the city. But we're buying the land. We own the land. We're going to fund this just like Phil Anschutz told, you know, California and the city of Los Angeles, I'm buying the land down here. I've got the money to build this. Don't worry about it. All that they got was about $12 million in various subsidies. Stan Kroenke doesn't get, you know, SoFi Stadium built if Stan Kroenke's not Stan Kroenke. Stan Kroenke didn't ask for anybody's money. Stan Kroenke built it with his own money. That's why a stadium got built finally in Los Angeles. There was lots of other, discussions and plans to build stadiums, but they all kept coming back and asking for public money. When you ask for public money and you're a billionaire, doesn't really go well. Tim's smart. Tim's got the financial backing. Tim's got the vision. Tim's got the relationships. Tim will be right in the middle of expansion in the NBA, because I think you're going to see one in Seattle now that you've got Climate Pledge Arena, because Seattle deserves their Sonics. And you'll probably see it go into Vegas because it's the next natural market. And you know, the league wants to do an all-star game there, which they have in when they had the earthquake that knocked it out of LA. They believe they could use another arena. There's certainly discussions about MLS coming there at some point. He's going to be in position to accommodate an NBA team because they're not going to go in T-Mobile. It's too booked with UFC and the Knights. They already control it. So an NBA team's going to need to control their arena. Tim's going to build entertainment. They've got the relationship with Irving Azoff. So their concerts and those types of activities are going to be a very big part of what they do. So they're not going to be reliant initially on an NBA team being there. They're going to build, they're going to fill it with everything else. And it will be nothing short of spectacular, that I can assure you. Because there's not a property that Tim Leiwicki has been involved in his career that hasn't been massively successful and been well thought out. So, you will see a Kraken Knights rivalry get burgeon. You'll see that section of the strip, the south end of the strip, explode with activity, if the A's come and if they build in the Tropicana site, you will then have this, 2.5-3 mile stretch of just absolute entertainment of I've seen one of the aerial views, and you've got Allegiant Stadium here and where the A's stadium would be. You've got T-Mobile Arena here, and you've got where OVG is going to be building there. You'd have five professional sports arenas literally within a 3 mile stretch.
Where are they planning to actually build it? The actual location is it that big plot of land next to the Wynn, across the road from the Wynn, or no?
OVG?
Yeah,
it's north of the South Coast, South Point or South Point now. But so it's south of where the Mandalay Bay is, south of Mandalay Bay and north of South Point. So it's if you look at Warm Springs, Las Vegas Boulevard, and the I-15, that's the land. And that's actually the land that 16 years ago I controlled for $2.5 billion, 5,000 room hotel, 11 venue site that was known as the City of Sports.
Wow.
And we had the naming rights sold for it and it never got built.
Once again, thank you very much. It's been a really interesting episode. We seem to be talking about Saudi Arabia almost every single week. So it's become a very common theme. That means that they're doing a lot of work in the space, and we'll see how things pan out moving forward. All righty, buddy.
All right. Well, again, another great week. A lot of stuff to talk about, and we'll see what the week ahead brings. I'll be on the road, so I'll look forward to connecting with you. I think I'll be where will I be? Next Wednesday we can catch up. I'll be in El Paso. Should be fun. Lots going on. We didn't even get the U.S. Open and all that kind of fun stuff. So there'll be a lot of topics to cover next week.
Fantastic. I look forward to it. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Thank you all that tune into our podcast, the audio version, of course. And once again, we'll catch you all next week. Take care, everyone.
See you later. All right. Take care.